Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, where you hear about the business of the casino entertainment industry from the people who make it happen. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we sit down with Kevin Sheehan, the president and CEO of Scientific Games, on how he has managed to increase the value of his company so substantially in less than 2 years on the job. The GGB Podcast is brought to you by iGamingPlayer.com, the leading affiliate marketing service for land-based and online casinos in North America. The merger of Scientific Games with WMS and later Bally Technologies created a wagering giant. The convergence of lottery and gaming finally became a reality, and Kevin Sheehan was soon brought in as president and CEO to manage the complicated business. Sheehan has experience repositioning companies like Norwegian Cruise Lines, Avis and Budget Rent-A-Car, and the Spanish-language television station Telemundo. At Scientific Games, he has cut costs, increased innovation, and led a share price increase of more than 200% over the last 2 years. He spoke with me and editor Frank Legato at the Scientific Games offices in Las Vegas in January. Kevin Sheehan, thanks for joining us on the GGB Podcast. We're excited about doing this interview with you and having you on the cover of our February issue. There's so much has happened, and we're just glad that we can get together with you.
I'm excited as well. Still learning the industry, but every day is a new adventure here.
Great. So you've accomplished the same things here for Scientific Games that you did at Norwegian Cruise Lines, you know, merging the companies, and especially the cultures of the two companies into one cohesive company moving forward. How has your experience at NCL kind of guided what you've done here at Scientific Games?
You know, it's funny. It's almost like the same game book has played out in everything I've done. When we started Telemundo, as an example, we didn't have a culture. Mm-hmm. So it was a great opportunity to figure things out as we went. And
right. We
started by building and buying TV stations and setting up network operations. But getting that culture right was very useful for me then when I went to Avis and I walked into an employee-owned company. And it was a culture of, I don't want to change. Mm-hmm. I don't want to innovate. My only focus is on paying down debt.
Right. And
to morph that into one of the highest successful IPOs over the two-year period it was public was great success for the team.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right, and the same thing was at Norwegian, where we went into a company. It was effectively bankrupt. If the Apollo private equity firm hadn't put money into the venture, they would not have been able to meet their bills unless there was a very wealthy owner. He would have had to put more money in. He had put money in three times already. He's mm-hmm. also in the gaming industry with Genting.
Mm-hmm.
But culture is like the key element of this, is getting people to understand what's the opportunity and get them all working on the same game book or playbook.
Mm-hmm.
That we're all working towards a common goal, and here's how we get, and eyes wide open, and make sure people have information, and making them feel part of the process, engaging them in the efforts as we go, and then they all start to be inspired by it, and then the success starts to breed success, and mm-hmm. then everybody starts to believe, and then, you know, as you know, the culture was a little bit defeated when I came in, to now it's very excited, and we lead many parts of the industry now, and we're just on our, in the early innings of what we should be able to accomplish
sure.
in coming years.
Well, just in the last year, the financial performance of the company has really been nothing short of astounding. The share price has just soared. Tell us how you accomplished that.
I don't want to make too much of the share price. I think, at the end of the day, investors are smart,
mm-hmm.
and they'll watch what's going on, and when they see things. And it was funny, because when we first started together as the team, and it's been a bit of an evolving team. We,
sure.
as you know, have a new CMO
right.
and a HR leader, and so we're continuing to build on our organization. But first, the bondholders started to see. So when I got to the company, our bonds were all trading at deep, deep discounts,
mm-hmm.
and
right.
when you looked at it, and said, "Oh my God, they're not expecting us to be able to
right.
get through this." And once you started to see, then the bonds all started to trade up dramatically quickly, and then they were trading at a premium.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really the first indication
right.
that we were getting it right. And
mm-hmm.
then, as you said, the stock price. And I think a lot of the stock price was compressed because of this sensitivity to where the bond prices were. And once we got that fixed, and exactly what you said is just getting the business to be a little bit more consistent and, you know, delivering consistent quarter after quarter. I think we've got 8 quarters now. So, you know, being focused on all of the ingredients of the income statement, on the top line, the revenue, all the pieces of revenue, making sure everyone's watching every piece. And you know, it's the days or the leadership of other companies that may say, hey, I got to win that $100 million deal.
Right.
We all want to fight for that. But at the end of the day, you don't become successful on the $100 million deal. You become successful in taking the business that's going to grow by 2.5% and moving it to 3.25%. And that little bit of difference on every single thing that you do and getting everybody to understand that, I think, is a big part of it. So, so increasing the scope of the top line revenue growth, and then being somewhat more disciplined and thoughtful about how do we take all of these different cost structures that we have and how do we put them together in a more effective way to run the business more effectively that gets us better results, more timely, so we can make better decisions.
Right.
So I think a lot of that is all part of this.
So cost cutting is always a part of a financial restructure, but it's really the key is the balance between the R&D growth and the manufacturing capabilities and things of that nature. How did you balance all that?
Yeah, so I would say, you know, cost cutting was really not an objective here.
Right.
It was really sitting back and looking at, you know, whether you call it Kaizen events or lean management. There was, as you know, Bally's and WMS, and there was Shuffle Master. There were all these companies that were pulled together but never really synergized.
Right.
So just getting everyone to be working toward the common goal of the business, we were able to be more effective. And that, by nature, just takes out a lot of the cost. And, you know, I look at the team that we have here, and I'm hopeful that we have a team that's going to build over time. So if you want to be part of this team and you are energized to come to work every day, there's no reason why you won't be in this company for many years. So you know, having said that, but if we're spending money on having the same thing done by three different technology systems, we need to get it on one system. And that was a lot of the benefits that we are starting to see and that you'll see in 18 and 19 from this company.
Okay, great, great. So we're sitting here in this Bermuda Road facility, and this is a consolidation of a couple of other buildings that you've had prior to your arrival. Has it helped you consolidate the operations here in terms of you know, improving that corporate culture and getting everybody under the same roof?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, it was two ways we could go. The other building, which was the original Shuffle, that was a great facility, and we could have taken the warehouse out of that and just opened that up and had all of our employees there, too. So we really debated for quite a while, do we want to be there or here? And the thing about this is that if you look out my window, you see that all the buildings are kind of surrounding us.
Right.
And it reminds you a little bit of Alibaba or some of the other campuses.
Right. Yeah.
And when you walk in, you feel part of the community. And that's what we're eventually trying to bring together here. And we just had a little Christmas party where all of the people from the four or five buildings here were all together. We had an all-hands meeting before and then a little cocktail party afterwards to celebrate the holidays.
Great. And you added to this building that we're in a few thousand square feet, from what I understand, as well.
Yes, there's about 1,000 people here.
Yeah.
I could be off a little bit, but we stripped down the space and we rebuilt it. There's a load of space. There's actually ping pong tables down there, a big room for people to have lunch, and there's a great way of displaying all of our new machines and technology.
Right.
So we were able to do it right.
Right.
And that was the key. And having parking spaces and taking away the very important people that thought they were entitled to parking spaces and just having everybody parking when they come.
Right. Yes.
So no big shots. So it's, all of that is part of the culture.
Well, I was able to find a space today, so I'm happy.
Oh, that's good. Well, there's a visitor space or two.
Yeah, one or two. There used to be a whole row of them, but not anymore. So now that you got the stock price on this upward trend, what are you going to do to keep it going in that direction?
It's a very simple formula: measured, orderly growth, consistency, and And as I said, I talk about the entrepreneurial spirit. That's so important to me, and it was important when I was talking to Matt Davey, who's our CEO of, almost ours,
right,
yep. at NYX, because he's a very entrepreneurial guy. And I said, hey, this is Kevin Sheehan. I won the Entrepreneur of the Year from EY. I'm the same kind of guy,
right.
and I thrive on that kind of environment. And I think getting all of us, I mean, at the end of the day, we're here, why? Because people invest in our company, and they expect a return.
Right.
And as long as we can show that we're making progress, the stock will perform. So it's all about doing a little bit better every day, every quarter, every year.
Sure. Absolutely. You know, we're going to have Frank Fantini write something for us on the financial shape of the company, and he asked me to ask a question about debt. In the old days, gaming technology companies had minimal debt, you know, if any at all. Now with the acquisitions and the consolidation,
right.
you know, it's a pretty big part of the companies. Where do you stand on the level of debt that this company should have?
It is funny, because when I went into Norwegian Cruise Line, our net debt to EBITDA was 16 times.
Mm-hmm.
When I came here, we were 8 and change, I think.
Right.
And now we're down in the mid-6s, and, mm-hmm. You know, we'll be below 6 times sometime next year.
Mm-hmm.
So, to me, that was the opportunity, right?
Sure,
when you look
right.
at the stock price, a lot of it is the leverage on the balance sheet and being able to show performance, and then the performance leads to, you know, more confidence with the bond community, and then the bond prices trade up. And then all of a sudden you're able to go and refinance.
Right.
And then by refinancing, we've got a couple big refinancings. We did a couple this year. We've got some big ones coming up next
mm-hmm.
year. We've got $2.2 billion worth of 10% debt that we're able to refinance at the end of next year, assuming we continue on our journey. And that could be a massive savings for the company. So all of that stuff then plays out. And then all of a sudden you've got loads of cash flow to pay down your debt.
Sure.
And, you know, we'll be sitting here saying, hey, Kevin, why aren't you levered up enough? Well, you should be buying some more businesses.
Correct.
And that's where we're going to be in a few years.
Yeah, okay. So, Frank has some questions about brands.
One thing unique about games, is this collection of all these strong brands under one roof. What challenges did you face in integrating those brands, and how did you meet those challenges?
You're talking about WMS and Bally's.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're right. And it's a work in process, I would say. We have a wonderful legacy in each of those businesses, so you don't want to undermine that. And to me, if you went back in my background, I was a big part of a company called Cendant, and we owned everything. We had 12 hotel brands, you know, from Wyndham, Wingate, Ramada, Days Inns,
Super
8. Howard Johnson's Travelodge. We owned Century 21, Coldwell Banker, ERA, Corcoran Group, Sotheby's.
Yes.
We owned everything in travel, from Orbis to Cheap Tickets to Galileo and Avis and Budget, and a million brands. We owned a million brands. And the one thing I learned from my boss, Henry Silverman, was respect the brands. We never, ever, ever marketed Ascendant, and we marketed the heck out of all of the brands. And, you know, the learning I got there very early on is if somebody was calling to book a hotel room in Days Inn on a corner in Fort Lauderdale, and they were booked up, and there was a Super 8 and a Harold Johnson's and a Travelodge in the other three corners, they wouldn't go to those guys. They would go to the next version of the Days Inn or whoever brand I used. And so the power of the brands and not hurting them. So we need to develop them and nurture them. And I think, I don't want to get into specifics, but I thought we did a couple of things maybe that weren't consistent with making sure we held those guys up as high as they deserve to be with their long legacy. But having said that, the other part of it is critically important to me is that we do understand that we work for Scientific Games, and we're all part of a great cause, but we're fighting like mad within our individual brands. So, 3-4 years later, walking through Chicago, and you almost feel like you're working at WMS, is not exactly what I would like to see us be. I would love to see us very proud of our brand that we're representing, but being part of the greater good of Scientific Games. Did I answer that okay?
It's important, though, that players really expect the nuances of a Bally game, and they expect the nuances of a WMS game, a couple master table.
Yeah, Yes. I know a lot less about this industry than you do, but I know that. And I know that certain people come in for a WMS game, and if they're not going to get that experience, they're not going to be happy.
So,
okay. Now, how are these brands strengthening the lottery division, which was the core Scientific Games product?
The sum of the parts should be bigger than the 1+1+1. And, that was not, I would say, I don't want to be critical, but I think the thinking here was that when you do 1+1, it's going to be 1.8 as opposed to 2.3. And, we have, I don't ever want to be suggesting we're in a market share fight, but I think we relinquished some market share because we weren't thinking about it the way I think we should have been looking at it. And I think we didn't invest in certain parts of the business in the last couple of years, like the game ops business, and so much of that share was gained by one of our competitors. So I think it's important to keep an eye on that. But I also think you're right. When you get a great product like some of the Asian games that we've come up with, that now we're doing in social and we're doing lottery games and versions of those. So that and all of the brand names, and you can see we've got a Monopoly game we're about to roll out on the lottery side. We've got the Willy Wonka golden ticket on the lottery side, and it's been a big success on the gaming side. And we've got a Monopoly game coming on social. So we're trying to leverage that now as smartly as possible, and I think we're turning the corner on doing that more opportunistically.
So what are the strongest products that have come out of the merger of the legacy companies, of the technologies that you brought together?
Well, I didn't bring them together. I'm just the orchestra leader. There's a lot of smart people
around
this company.
You've got to get them playing the right notes, though, that's for sure.
Yeah. So, when you look at each of the things, there's little diamonds in the rough of each. At WMS, we had the social business. Mm-hmm. And we had it, and it wasn't really going the way we wanted it to go. And then we brought in some new leadership, and then poof, nirvana, and it's growing in leaps and bounds. And we have a great track record now. I see that continuing into the future. We've created a massive, successful business there, and we have a lot of confidence it's going to continue to grow that way. When you look at the Bally side of the business, you think about our strength in the gaming systems. Mm-hmm. And, we had the lion's share of the market, but I would say we faltered. Mm-hmm. It's in each one, right?
Sure.
We faltered. We kind of rested on our laurels. Mm-hmm. And, we relied on these big mainframe technologies, and the world is changing to cloud-based, blah, blah, blah. Right. So then we brought in this new superstar, I think, Kath Burns, and she's running the business now, and get everybody addicted to, hey, we've got to get it done today, we've got to get it done tomorrow, and there's no, waiting for mañana, mm-hmm. as
no
we
much.
Said in Telemundo.
Right. So you mentioned James Bond. I mean, this is a pretty incredible opportunity for the company. How are you planning to capitalize on what might be the most gambling-friendly brand ever?
Yeah, it's amazing, right? So we can't talk too much about stuff beyond the stuff that we've already showed at G2E. I think next G2E is going to be pretty exciting to show everybody what another year of us within the agreement and within Applied Minds and there and our team fully understanding the art of the possible. That we're going to be doing things that are different, and if we are just making the same kind of slot machines and hoping that the same demographic is going to like those machines, that's important. We got to do that, but we also got to make sure we keep an eye on how do we get the next generation or an expanded or demographics that aren't coming into the casino or aren't interested because of the type of games. And so we got to be very careful. We can't do stupid things.
Sure.
But I would say that if we don't make a couple of mistakes, that would be a mistake in itself, that we're not going to get you know, great success unless we make a couple mistakes along the way. And and I'm pushing the guys to be open to making mistakes so that we can push the envelope. But there's a lot of excitement there and venues and experiences that we think we could bring to the market. Mm-hmm. And the market is waiting for. You look at the casino space, especially in a place like Vegas, where it's morphed into more of an entertainment place, and it's got these big, massive floors. And if we can come up with an offering that makes a more productive space and more exciting and brings people to the casino, that's a win-win for everybody.
Sure. Well, Sean was telling us you have access to all the various James Bonds down through the years, from Sean Connery.
Well, every movie, every actor, lead actor, every, and I keep calling them the wrong things, not hot girls, Bond girls.
Right, exactly. But yeah, there's so much opportunity there, and so much.
I think so.
Just thinking about what's possible is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, our chairman is so excited. He wants to be James Bond himself.
Yeah, sure.
So he's very focused on us being successful at this.
You know, the NYX deal is important to your company, and I've known Matt really since he started out within NYX, and always been impressed with him. So where is that going to lead you, certainly when it comes to possibly legal sports betting in this country, and also the content that they have, the content and the platforms and other venues? I mean, they've got a full package there.
Yeah, you've hit a lot of the high points. I mean, to me, the basic thing that I always say at the beginning is, which is incredible when you think about this, is a business that should be trading at a much higher level. And unfortunately for them, they put a lot of acquisitions together, and the market wasn't willing to wait too long. There's a great business there. Matt's a great leader, and he's surrounded himself with some really good people. And they're on the cusp of really bringing that business to a much higher level. But having said that, the way the business is operating today, and then taking into account the synergies that we know are clear synergies, like taking out certain duplicative public company costs and all the stuff that you can think about, and then and the fact that then the transaction becomes accretive is amazing to me. That's positive to our earnings in the first year, and then it's also leverage neutral, which I'm not sure the market fully understood. So that's day one or year one, and then Matt and his team are working on a load of stuff to build the existing business, and they've got a lot of new customers coming in the fold. So that's all really good stuff. Then you step back, you say, okay, so what can we do? And then you look at the platforms. We've got platforms that are similar, not as good. So what do you think we're going to do? We're going to take and morph into the new platforms. Matt's got lots of games that are on his products. We happen to have a great portfolio of great games. And so why would we pay a third party to do that? We'll now, as much, you still want to have some independent games on there, but you'll be able to utilize that stuff. So there's so many opportunities. And that's all going to be working very quickly. I've got a guy, I named him Mr. SVP Synergy. And he's a good guy. He's relentless. He's going to work like an animal to be successful. And he's working with the teams both here and at NYX. And hopefully, we're going to have this, we got a little bit of confusion along the way in the deal, but I think we're all clear now. And so everybody's focused on day one and getting a lot of stuff done. So that's all of that. But the thing that's not even counted is exactly what you said, that the states and when you look at it, the momentum is starting to look like things will start to break. And it'll be like the lemming theory. Once one or two states break, then everybody's going to say, what about me? And you've got this massive, massive amount of money that's being bet every week, and it's not... and the government's getting no take on it. It's pretty stupid when you think about it, And so... as that happens, so look at Scientific Games. So we have the platform that makes the best sense of anybody. And we happen to have, if it's, state one and state two, one goes gaming, one goes lottery, we've got the solution. So I don't think anyone else can be as nimble in being successful for a state in delivering this to the market and starting to earn revenue.
All right, another question Frank sent me, Frank Fantini. With the big round of mergers between Scientific Games and IGT and some of the other companies is now over, do you see that going to continue, or are we just going to see tuck-ins like the NYX deal and some of the other smaller deals now?
So I think when I came in, as you know, we had all these big acquisitions, and there was a lot of skepticism as to whether they made sense. So I think hopefully over time we'll prove that out. So then when I came, I wanted to get us back to being thought of as being successful in doing acquisitions. So we've done DEQ, we've done SpiceRack, we've done Labs. We've done four transactions, and in each of those cases, we went to the board of directors and said, here's what we think we can do with this, and they approved it. Mm-hmm. And in every one of those transactions, we've done better.
Right.
So that, to me, gave a sense to everybody that we were a bit better and more refined as a team to get this stuff accomplished. So having that done, that enabled me to feel more confident in us pushing NYX. Mm-hmm. And that's a big one for us to make sure we get that to work. And having said all of that, once we get that rolling, you know, keeping the eye on the ball of the other players and, you know, is there smart things to do to strengthen the proposition that we have? Because I don't think there'll be another leg on the table like NYX was.
Right.
But, you know, there could be things, you know, in each of the businesses that you could think about that you could put into them that I wouldn't say would be just a tuck-in, but could be a bit of a game changer,
right,
too.
Okay, great. I actually have a question about the lottery and the gaming business working together. You know, it seemed like a natural fit just because it's all gambling, it's all betting. But the lottery business is different because the contracts are so much longer.
Yes.
10-year contracts
or even longer.
So, whereas gaming is year to year. How are you managing both those different expectations there?
I think the fact that we've got two really good guys, Derek Mulberry and Jim Kennedy, mm-hmm. running those businesses, and me coming in from the outside and not understanding why we can't all be working together,
right.
I think has helped us to do more and more together. Mm-hmm. And some of it is behind the scene, and some of it is customer-facing. Mm-hmm. And I think you'll see more and more of that as we move forward.
And a lot of the content sharing, too, the brand sharing.
Yeah, a couple of examples I used before.
Right. So they kind of have that synergy then in that case.
Oh, yeah, yeah, sure.
Okay, great. So you've been at the helm of the company now for a year and a half.
Is that dog years? Or?
It must seem like that, right?
Oh, my God.
And you mentioned some of the people, you know, you have some great people in place with Joe Kennedy and Derek and Kath Burns now. How much of what you've accomplished thanks to the efforts of those people that were here when you got here, or you brought on since then?
I would tell you that it's the lion's share of that is the team that was here, mm-hmm. and just getting revitalized a little bit, mm-hmm. maybe shown a little bit different way of doing things, and patting them on the back and saying, you guys are successful, we are winners, and getting to feel more confidence. I think that's a lot of what has happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think the second part of it is, as you say, getting new energy and new perspectives in with the new people that have come in. It's a balance, and it's been the success formula I've had in many of the things I've done. At Norwegian, you know, in the beginning, I changed out the entire leadership team except for two of the 16 people, which was pretty dramatic. And I brought back a few more of the people that had been in the cruise industry, but it was a balance of people that came from, you know, F&B, or they came from entertainment, or they came from something different, and we all kind of worked together towards a better outcome.
Mm-hmm. Great. So what are the biggest opportunities in the next year coming up for each division?
Well, of course, start with NYX is get that transaction closed and show the market that we're really doing well with that asset, mm-hmm. and hopefully become appreciative that we did that deal, because it's going to be a big one for us. On the social business, it's going to be, you know, a continuation of building the top line, and you know, we've been small, so when you build a new game, you're putting a lot of marketing in place. But we have a great marketing team there, and we're starting to see the benefits of all of that disciplined marketing. And now that we've got four or five games that are already out, it becomes a lesser part of it. So letting the business model start to grow and show the EBITDA growth that I know is there. The lottery business, we've got something called PsyQ. I don't know if you've seen that.
Mm-hmm.
It's machines that are that are built for the big retailers, right, so that they can instantaneously deliver tickets to the consumer. Mm-hmm. But the keys are it's got much better control. So the 1% that's lost through theft or mistakes or whatever, that would be wiped out. So that would be a big positive.
Sure.
And then when you talk to guys like 7-Eleven or others, they'll say that, you know, they have 15 people in the accounting department that work on closing the books for,
right,
for the lottery.
Mm-hmm.
And now with this technology, the machine spits out the answer.
Right.
So you're making things so much better for them. And Jim and his team have done a great job. We had our lottery show a month and a half or so ago,
right,
and you could tell that this was going to be a winner. So that's a big one for them. And then, you know, we got Italy renewed, so that's great to have that off the you know, the at-risk of things. And you know, we're looking at Brazil and a couple of other things, so that's all working. And then in gaming, I think Dirk and his team, Bob Perrini, have had a fantastic year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're number one player in the market in game sales. We have a completely rethought of and built strategy for reestablishing ourselves in game operations. We've got the new energy in gaming systems, and we've got a lot of positive momentum there and a lot of new business in Canada. And then our table products, we've got new stuff coming out, and we're well positioned for that business as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, it's incumbent on us to keep it going and not mess it up.
Sure, absolutely. So one more question. What do you see Cygames being in 5 years?
Hopefully
in
a long distance viewmaster from my house in the Hamptons or wherever I lay out being. But I think Cygames is one of these companies that it's a diamond in the rough that I think, it's been kind of not exploited from a perception standpoint, because
mm-hmm.
it's a well-run business that hasn't been like waving flags.
Right.
But the performance that we're going to have over the next number of years is going to force people to look at us and say, who is this company? And, you know, wow, it's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my hope is that we start being called a technology company and get away from this game machine maker,
mm-hmm.
which is, a piece of the business. But we really have thousands and thousands of people that work on development and technology. Even with NYX, it's almost 1,000 scientists, technology people there. So that's the my goal, because I think that gets us a bit of a multiple pickup in the marketplace as well.
Mm-hmm. So I'm sure you're keeping an eye on the personal devices. People really enjoy using their own personal device these days. And while the machines and the carousels are great, are you preparing for
it's huge. Yeah, I mean it's going to happen, and when it starts to happen, it's going to be very quick.
Right.
And this is the difference between you look at certain industries and you say, oh my God, that was a massive industry 3 years ago, and there's no companies left.
Right.
So you got to have eyes wide open at all times in this industry, and you got to be thinking about the next couple chapters. And if we're not doing that, that's our fault. And it's one of the reasons why we're putting a lot more effort in this company into research, which we hadn't done.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we used to call it research and development, and when I could dig into it, there was no research. It was all development, maybe a couple $1 million on a business with, many billions of dollars of revenue.
Right.
It's kind of silly.
Yeah.
So, that is a big important piece, because you're right. The mobile is going to take over so quickly on so much of this stuff.
Right. If you don't mind, I'd like to follow up a little bit more on the Dave & Buster's thing. I had been asked so many times when I was working at G2E that, oh, we got to hear from the Dave & Buster's CEO. So we were so glad that you could bring him in last year. And I think a lot of people got a lot out of that. But the transition from the Dave & Buster's age to so many people in the Dave & Buster's are a gambling age anyway.
They are.
So do you think you can translate that fun and excitement that you find in a Dave & Buster's to the casino floor?
I think it's funny, too. Mark Fasora and I have had this conversation a couple times. So Mark hired the designer. I don't want to say he's just a designer. He kind of helped us reframe the whole business.
Right.
We bought that through a private equity firm for $4.45. $0.25, I think it was,
yeah.
On an equivalent to the $71 the stock hit earlier this year. So it was like a 15 times return or whatever.
Right.
And, you know, so he did a lot of stuff. And there was a lot of smart people on the board and in the company. And we went through a lot of very thoughtful exercises to reinvent that business. Mm-hmm. It had been a tarred business that had been started by a guy named Dave and a guy named Busters. So he's hired that guy, and he's going out there, and he's trying to design. He's saying, "I'm trying to design stuff like, you know, he was mystified by the ceilings and how cheap it was at Dave and Buster's with the black ceilings." So I think, you know, when you start to see other people that are smart in the industry thinking about that stuff, I think it's the future.
Yeah,
and yeah, it's not like that little kid place. Dave and Buster's is mostly adult entertainment.
Right.
We've got, you know, all the sports bars now, and so we're getting all the people that come for the games now, and then the, you know, the spouse comes, or they come with the family, and the kids are running around playing games, or the men, you know, the husbands are playing games. Or so we've got it in every, depending on the day part, you know, we've been able to figure out how to keep that place very busy. It's one that just opened in Summerlin, it's doing really well.
Right. Well, Kevin, thanks for taking the time to talk to us. You know, we've been, you know, really impressed with what you've done over the last year or so, and we want to stay in touch. So let's get back together next year, and we'll figure out, you know, what the next level is.
Great, and it's not me, it's the team.
That's right. Thank you very much. You. Hope you enjoyed this edition of the GGB Podcast, brought to you by iGamingPlayer.com, the leading affiliate marketing service for land-based and online casinos in North America. To learn more about the gaming industry, visit GGBMagazine.com, or for a weekly update, visit GGBNews.com. Follow us on Twitter at Global Gaming Biz, or on LinkedIn and Facebook at Global Gaming Business Magazine. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week on the Global Gaming Business Podcast.